And welcome to another Fool's Daily. I'm your host, Conrad. And today I'm joined by...
Dave Bartley.
Yet again.
Yes. We're talking the historicals again.
Yeah, you know, we thought if Mike and Spooner can sort of do the run-of-the-mill praises of brief sort of... rundowns of the various rule sets, we'd sort of dig deeper into them. So
Primers, as the American would have it.
Yes, that's right. So today we're going to do an in-depth, well, as much as we can. We'll try to avoid the sirens and extra alarms from our second Saga episode, but this isn't helping. we're going to talk about War and Conquest.
We certainly are, yes.
Which is a... Ancients rule set?
Predominantly at the moment, yeah, certainly. Although there are lists available that go up to, I think, the Dark Ages and beyond, if I remember. Yeah, up into the Renaissance. So there is gunpowder available out there if that's your thing.
Yep. So War and Conquest is by a company called Scarab Miniatures. They sell the rules online, as well as other retailers do, and the rules are currently £20. It's a lovely hardback, full-colour book.
It is. It's with some beautiful pictures of miniatures all the way through. Wonderfully painted from a variety of manufacturers, which we won't go into.
180-odd pages, I think. And... Scarab is run by a man that some of us may or may not know from the past, one Rob Broom, who used to be the general manager at Warhammer Historicals, which is where WAB came from.
Warhammer Ancient Battles, to give it its full name.
That's correct. That's a rule set written by, I think, Rick Priestley and Jervis Johnson, wasn't it?
I think so, predominantly. Yeah. Helped other people along the way, but yeah, I'm pretty sure they're the people that would have the names. I can't see my rules on the shelf, so I can't check.
So the one thing is that War and Conquest is very WAB-like. Many people have likened it or called it WAB 2, even though there is a WAB version 2 out there, which some people are not happy with because they didn't do enough with the rule set itself. I've never played WAB 2, but I have played War and Conquest, and when I played it for the first time, I was very, very excited. Yeah. Yet again.
I would say, I mean, there's, when you come to ancient rule sets, briefly, they're in two camps. They're either, as in War and Conquest or WAB, they're an individual model removal for casualties, or they're in an element style, whereas you don't take any figures off until you the whole element's gone. And WAB is a single model removal, which appeals to some ancient gamers, doesn't to others.
Yep. So,
and also it's aimed predominantly at the 28mm scale.
Yes, so this is a 28mm scale unit type, Warhammer-esque type game. It's got its roots very much like Warhammer Ancient Battles in 4th edition Fantasy Battle, with a load of extra stuff thrown in there to add flavour to the period, or the ancient wargaming, as it were.
It brings the flavour to me of what we think an ancient battle would have felt and looked like when represented with miniatures on the table.
Correct.
So, yeah. And it gives you that feel. You get battle lines that form, they get to come together, they grind a bit, and then one side will probably break off.
And there are sweeping movements.
Yeah.
There is the feel during combat of masses of bodies of troops pushing against each other, because there's this, you know, there's this shove and push and shove type bonus that you get, and there is a real feel for the fact that those units are actually engaged in combat, trying to get an upper hand as well.
I think one of the things that probably people coming from a Warhammer fantasy thing will notice for the first time is that in a combat, both sides fight. So it's not a case of one side gets a charge, decimates a unit, it runs away, and then right, that unit is now ready to go and do something else. The line's going to fight, there's going to be casualties both sides, and it's who's got the gets the momentum out of that combat that's going to carry the day.
Yep.
So you get that feel. It's more about putting the right troops in the right place and charging at the right time than just getting the charge off. which from the bits of fantasy I've played over the years, it always seems to come down to that quite a lot of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's some unique things in the rule sets. I feel that there's this concept of strategy intervention points, SIPs as they're called in the rule set. You start with a number of those based on what comes with essentially command elements in your army list, and they allow you advantages essentially.
Basically, this is they represent the will of your generals and your commanders and how good they are at keeping either your troops in the fight or gaining the upper hand. So it's how you can affect the, from a command and control point of view, how you can control the battlefield.
Yep. It's an interesting system and it's very, very good. It's dice roll dependent, obviously, but I find it's a really nice twist to the rule set.
Yeah, most of the time it's going to give you an extra dice in a roll, or so it improves your odds of either getting the initiative, which is called not the initiative.
Strategic advantage.
Yeah, posh. Or using morale rolls if you want to try and keep your troops in the fight. There are two main uses for it.
And essentially you have a number of points. I usually use dice to because essentially it's giving you a dice advantage as such.
Yeah.
To represent these SIPs, and when you want to use them, you pick it out of your SIP pool and roll it accordingly. Sometimes you're allowed it back only in certain morale tests, I think.
I suppose, yeah, if you use one for a morale check and you pass it, you get that back.
You get it back at the following turn, though.
Yeah. You can't use it again that turn, but yeah, it's not, you've not burnt it forever.
But if you use it for trying to gain strategic advantage, or essentially what is the initiative, you know, the choice of going first, which is a big thing in the game, that dice is burned, that SIP is burned.
Yeah.
So it's not, it's a resource pool that decreases over the game.
I suppose we should say it is an I go, you go game. However, when you're in combat, both sides will fight in the combat. So you're never that sort of disjointed from the game.
Yep, there's no pre-measuring in the game.
No.
And the army list, I think I should briefly cover the army list. There's no sort of official army list as such, but there's huge support from the community. And, you know, Rob, I think Scarab itself kind of endorse these lists anyway. So
yeah, I mean they're all available. There's hundreds of lists available on the forums.
Yeah.
And if people want to take a list and play it, they're always very happy to get your feedback.
Yeah.
I know stuff I fed back about my Republican Romans, Rob's. They're now up to the version 3. So if you are wanting to give them a go, you are wanting to play, your feedback will be taken on board and taken note of.
Oh, I think I might make a note of that, because I think Spara, there needs to be some sort of adjustment to the way Spara are used, because I obviously play Achaemenid Persians because I love that particular period. I like the classical Greece, the Macedonian periods. So my army is the Achaemenid Persians.
Yeah, I remember my Republican Romans walked towards them, which was in hindsight a bit of a dumb thing to do.
So
hey, live and learn.
So the game's made up of a number of sequences, isn't it? It's like start of game, movement, shoot, combat, resolution, and end phase. I don't really want to go through the whole gameplay, but I wanted to pick out some unique things about the actual game itself. And one of the things that I'm immediately picked up on once I started to play the game was the fact that when you actually set up your battlefield, essentially ancient battles, or my understanding, or you know, the history that I've read of ancient battles, is that battlefields were chosen.
Yes, there was from a historical period, there was no such thing as a meeting engagement. Armies just didn't happen to clash. I mean, where they did, that's where you play a skirmish game.
Yeah,
because you know the scouts would hit each other, they'd work out where each other was, and then they'd find a nice piece of ground, and the battle would take place there. I mean, not always perfect, but yeah, generally you're not going to be sort of fighting in horrendous terrain.
No, I remember reading accounts of the battlefield being chosen, and then you know, for instance, when the chariots were used clearing the ground of
The slaves were sent out overnight to clear all the big stones out so the chariot wheels wouldn't get broken. Yeah,
yeah, and then they meet up the next day and off they go, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So the battlefield is quite sparse in terms of terrain because essentially that's how a battlefield would be.
Yeah.
You choose deployment based on three types of deployment. Sorry, four types of deployment: summer, autumn, winter, or spring, and that adjusts how you deploy your troops.
So whether you're straight across long edges or you're at a diagonal, and it's amazing, you know, the games that actually take you off that straight across the table actually affect your thinking and how you play the game, and how it makes the table amazingly different for a 6x4 rectangle, basically.
Yep. Yeah. No. So there's four types of deployment essentially. There's, you know, your straight 12 inch from the back edge. There's a diagonal deployment, and then there's sort of a flank deployment and a corner type deployment.
Yeah.
The next thing I wanted to talk about was rally points. The concept of rally points. So like Fantasy Battle, when you flee from combat or flee from terror or horrors or whatever, you know, fear test, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You essentially turn that unit directly away and run away. There's this concept of rally points, which is essentially your baggage or your camp or where it would be behind the army. Mm-hmm. And you can have a number of these rally points around the board. And essentially when you flee, that unit flees to the closest rally point.
Yeah.
And I love that idea. It's just so thematic, I think.
Yeah, rather than just running off the field. You know, they're going somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going back there because that's where I've left all my kit, and I'm going to pick it up before I scarper.
Yeah, just going to get me gold.
Yeah, yeah.
Then, like many games, you have scenario-type play as well. So there's these battle objective type idea. So there's like...
Yeah, it's not always just about getting in there and killing each other.
So they list six in the book.
Mm.
So you've got your normal pitch battle. You've got breakthrough, where you're trying to break through. Search and destroy, what's that about? You must attempt to identify and destroy
two formations.
Formations. Raid, take and hold, and test of strength. So that, again, there's these... And the thing is that each side, each player, can have a different objective.
Yes.
Which I like as well.
Yeah, and obviously, so you're not entirely sure what your opponent's goal is, and you've got to try and work out from how he's playing the game what he's actually trying to achieve.
Yep.
Which always adds an element of interest and intrigue into any game.
No, absolutely, yes. I mean, I love those two things add a slight twist or a flavour to the actual game itself, I think. Apart from that, there are noticeable differences in terms of movement based on the type of troop you are, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, certain types of troops. I mean, obviously, you have like the standard sort of ancient types, your regular blocks of infantry. You have light infantry that will fight formed up but may skirmish, and you have skirmishers.
Yeah.
You've got just big blobs, and they can all move slightly differently and are less affected by terrain the more towards the skirmish end you get.
Yep. And the other thing I noticed, they've taken a sort of 40K-esque type approach to moving through essentially terrain types, where you roll dice for how far you can go.
Yeah.
And I, when I first came across that, I thought, I'm not sure about that. But do you know what? In terms of quick play and flavour, it works quite well, actually.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's certainly it's the first time I've come across that in an Ancients game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can't recall of another one that messes with your movement distance like that. You generally get half, or there would be some sort of form of disordering, so you'd be at a disadvantage. So certain troop types would be a disadvantage fighting in closer terrain, is how most of those would treat it.
Yep, yep. Movement, you can sort of do your different types of movement as well, can't you? You can do march.
There's march, there's charging, doubling. And the closer you are to the enemy, the less choice you have.
Yes. And
sort of forming lines and marching forward if the enemy's within charge range, because they just wouldn't do that.
I think that also there's a concept of if the enemy's close and you try and do one of these things, you've got to take essentially what is a command test to see if that order is carried out. Otherwise, you're just sort of shuffling forward. But I like that idea because it sort of gives the idea of, well, I'm not sure about going any closer to those to that enemy. So,
and obviously, form blocks of pikemen and stuff like that are a lot less manoeuvrable than your skirmishers.
Yeah.
So yeah, they can't wheel or turn as easily as anyone else.
But it does make for the first time I played. One thing I immediately saw was that blocks of troops move very quickly around the board, and
they certainly can. Yeah.
What is at the start a very static line, you know, you've got stuff all over the place because essentially you can triple move. And stuff moves quickly and it closes quite quickly.
Yeah, certainly it's not a game that you're gonna spend turn after turn of lines creeping to each other. Certainly if you want to give a fight, you can certainly get across the table and get stuck in pretty rapidly. Obviously, whether that's a good thing for all your troops or not is a different matter.
So the shooting and melee's done sort of a la fantasy battle, you know, with your weapon skill to hit rolls and armor saves and things like that.
Yeah, basically, it's a number of D6s, you've got an ability, and you're looking at a target number.
Yep.
Then you've got armor saves, and then any failed saves may or may not hurt the enemy.
Yep. And then, as we've mentioned earlier, the combat resolution, again, sort of fantasy battle, WAB-esque, is based on, you know, ranks, but then what I found very unique again was the fact that if you win the combat and your opponent doesn't break, because you win the combat, you get a push.
Yeah, you get a push and shove. So basically,
push and shove, modify.
So basically, while the combat, one side won't or doesn't automatically run away.
Yeah.
But the side that wins will have an advantage in the next turn, in the next round of combat, because obviously they're pushing back. So they're the guys that are on the attack still. They're pushing. So, you know, they're in a much better state for fighting than the guys that are starting to lose. And they're losing the morale a little, but they're not broken yet.
Yep. What was I going to say? I was going to say the fact that, going back to SIPs as well, so with combining the sort of movement and flow of things, you can put yourself into a position where you want to have to go first. You want to be the next turn. So you can actually have a back-to-back turn, essentially.
Yes.
Which is another sort of unique point of the game, I find, because you can manoeuvre yourself into a position and potentially then have another turn and off you go. Obviously, it's dice roll dependent because the strategic advantage roll is essentially a D6 roll, but you can add SIPs to it to essentially roll
more D6s.
Yeah. But they can, as has happened to me, still roll lower than your opponent.
Yeah, who's not been there, hey? At that point, once you got through the combat, you're into there is one sort of rally phase that's shared across both players. So while each player has a phase when the combat ends, units may run away, you actually all rally together in the one end phase.
Yeah,
which again is a bit different.
It's a sort of tidy up phase as well, isn't it, really?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
But the one thing I've liked about the rule set is I found it difficult to find stuff, and sometimes the reading of, or my interpretation of things wasn't what I thought it was. But then you go back or you ask a question on the Scarab forums, and the Scarab forums are very, very helpful.
Yeah, I'd certainly say a few things I've thought are a bit confusing, and I've been to the forums and it's cleared it up pretty much straight away.
But then once, it's like any rule set, you know, irrespective of how clean a rule set is or how difficult it is, once you get to know where stuff is, you can flick through the rule book and get there. There are quick reference sheets available for download. You know, obviously the army lists are there for download. And the forums are there for help if you want it.
And for anyone out there that's sort is playing fantasy but wants to maybe sort of think about moving into a different rule set, they have started to put online some fantasy style lists.
Yes, which is kind of exciting. They've been working, and this, from what I remember talking to Rob last year, this was going to be a free rule set, free PDF rule set to, and it was a tag on or an add on to the War and Conquest rules. introducing sort of magic, essentially.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, on the forums, there's a section for what is called War and Sorcery, yep. And in there, there's a PDF of a basic magic system. And currently, there's dwarves and orcs and goblins available for people to go out there, grab and have a play with.
So, for those of you who were living in the past, like many of us, of the golden age of fantasy battle, or what I figure was the golden age of fantasy battle, you can get dust off your fantasy battle armies and potentially play again with them.
Yeah, and certainly for all those people that decided that WAB 2 wasn't quite for them, I'd certainly encourage you to go and grab War and Conquest and give it a run.
Yep. Guess what, Dave?
We've run long. Go figure, hey?
So I think we've given a good summary of the game. I love the game. I think it's great. Go and give it a try. The Scarab are at Salute. I believe they're doing a reenactment or tabletop version of 300.
This year? Nice.
This year, yeah. So there will be the Spartans with rows and rows of Persians throwing themselves at them. So it sounds a bit Zulu-esque, but if it's going to provide fun and allow people to see some pretty figures on the table and also get experience of the rule set, then hey-ho, that's
going to be good. And there is a tournament scene for it for those people of that bent.
Yes,
there are tournaments around the country
for
it already. So.
Okay, then. I think we should call it a day, then.
Okay.
I've been Conrad.
I've been Dave.
Goodbye.
You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter, we're at Fools_Daily, or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.